The Ain't No Fang Podcast. From Arizona Sports, Ain't No Fang.
Well, the Diamondbacks may be finished for the season, but the baseball playoffs are ongoing. I'm Steve Zinsmeister with Derek Montilla and Cody Fincher as well. This is the Ain't No Fang Podcast. Derek, give us a quick rundown of things that we've seen in the last week in the baseball playoffs, and more specifically, I guess, in the last couple of days.
Well, Steve, last time on MLB, we were talking about who we expected to see in the World Series. And
correct.
At this point, we're still on track, potentially. In the AL, we have the Houston Astros in the ALCS. And tonight, a final Game 5 between the Tampa Bay Rays and the New York Yankees to decide who will face off against the Astros. In the National League, we have the Los Angeles Dodgers going up against the Atlanta Braves. The one thing I like here, Steve, is we are careening dangerously towards a Los Angeles Dodgers-Houston Astros World Series. And I don't know how to feel about that.
I do. I hate it.
I know you hate it. I hate it. Most Diamondbacks fans probably hate it because it's a no-win situation. But I'm going to give you two things. One, this is very similar to the WWE deciding to face off The Rock against Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania. This is the best rivalry going on in baseball right now, and it's quite potentially the best thing for the sport. Just to have that level of pettiness.
Controversy,
like true hatred of one team to another,
yeah.
All just kind of surfacing in the World Series. And also, you know, if you're a Diamondbacks fan, you do have the fact that you can root for Zach Greinke, who could potentially be the deciding factor in a seven-game series like that against the Dodgers with some of the injuries that they're facing and things that the Dodgers have going on. They've proven to be, you know, I'm not going to say beatable, but they have an Achilles heel or two. They're not as a certain thing as they were as this playoffs have gone on. The Padres did put up a decent effort, but the Dodgers just finally put them down last night in an emphatic way just to remind everybody that they are the dominating force that they are in baseball. Slam Diego had a fun run, and it was really fun to see him and root for those guys. They have a bright future ahead, and if they keep those pieces together and can add one or two, that's going to be a problem for the Dodgers in the future, just not yet.
Bear, what'd you like in the playoffs so far?
I liked that Zach Greinke gave Ramon Laureano the sign of the pitch that he was throwing, and then Ramon Laureano hit a bomb off him. That was pretty funny.
That's so classic Zach Greinke.
I've hated how it feels like the Dodgers were almost handed a spot in the NLCS just based on who they played. The Milwaukee Brewers didn't belong in the playoffs, and they didn't belong in a series with the Dodgers. They were so overmatched. They are so outmatched with talent compared to the Dodgers, and that was an easy series for LA to get through. And then San Diego, while you know they put up a pretty decent fight, especially in game two, they just got hit with the injury bug with their starting pitching, and along with Chris Paddock being terrible. I would have liked to have seen what this series would have been if both Mike Clevinger and Dinelson Lamet were both healthy.
Yeah.
Because those two are really good pitchers, and Lamet didn't make a single start in the playoffs. So I would have liked to have seen what would have happened if both those guys were healthy. But I've also liked the series with the Rays and the Yankees. It's been really entertaining. We have an elimination game, a game five this evening, Gerrit Cole versus Tyler Glasnow. That should be really fun. Or it could go the way of Gerrit Cole and Shane Bieber, where it's just a complete...
Oh, come on.
Come on.
That's a low blow.
Say it, though. Say the other thing,
Shane
Steve.
Shane Bieber was terrible.
Stop, talk about the Pirates now, Steve.
Oh, you want me to talk about the Pirates?
Just for fun.
Okay.
They look stupid.
when did they make the playoffs? Like 2012?
I don't know.
And it was the first time in my lifetime. I'm not kidding you. It was the only time they made the playoffs in my lifetime. The Pirates at one time had Gerrit Cole and Tyler Glasnow, who are both two of the more dominant pitchers. Glasnow had some iffy numbers this year.
They most recently made the playoffs in 2013.
13, okay.
2013.
And it's hard to imagine that these two aces, I think Glasnow has the highest upside of most pitchers in baseball. He has very low lows as well this year, but He's incredibly talented. Gerrit Cole was the best pitcher in the world last year and is still dominant this year. And as Bear mentioned, unfortunately for my Indians, he out-dueled Shane Bieber handedly that series.
2015. Sorry, 2015.
2015? Was it really? Yeah, I thought it was earlier 2015. Than that.
Both of their last playoff games were both the single elimination wild card games. Lost, and they lost both of those games.
Yeah, and so I don't even consider
they
that
were playoffs. Technically in the postseason, but yeah. The last time they were in a series was in 2013.
Well, you know me, I don't even consider lost. I don't consider wild card play in games. I don't consider that playoffs.
They're fun.
They also had J.A. Happ and Joe Blanton on their team at that time.
Yeah,
that
no, they did. Really they did. Team. Definitely did. But remember, Tyler Glasnow got traded with Austin Meadows, who's a really good outfielder, to the Rays for Chris Archer, who I think is pretty much nothing at this point.
How did that work out for him?
Not very good.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh.
And Gerrit Cole ended up on the Astros. We all know how that ended.
Yeah.
But then what's surprising is that the Astros are doing so well after Gerrit Cole left in free agency for the Yankees. And then also Verlander was hurt. It's funny because last year would have been the year we all thought they were going to be World Series bound. Turns out that didn't happen.
It just goes to show how stacked the Astros organization was and how prepared they were for this. Even in this time where they're making moves and parting with like the pieces that they did in the Greinke trade, they're doing it for some elite level players, right? They've done a great job at maintaining that level of success without having to bang trash cans. That's the most surprising part.
Yeah.
No buzzers, no trash cans.
That we know of.
Now, I'm going to say that the broadcast has been having some fun with them because without directly talking about the Astros being cheaters, they like to throw up the numbers of the batting averages and stuff from two seasons ago versus where those guys are at now. So
it's dramatically lower now.
Yeah.
In case you were wondering.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
What makes it even worse and what makes you even hate that team even more is you see how freaking talented their players are and you just go, why did you cheat? You didn't need to cheat, you bunch of jerks.
You know, like, it reminds me of the stupid ESPN thing they did on SportsCenter years ago when Barry Bonds and all the other guys were taking steroids and blasting the ball out of the ballpark, and they decided to do a piece on the baseball and, you know, the leather that was being made by Rawlings, and they went down to Mexico where the cows were being farmed and were investigating.
Wow, they got really deep into
it. And they had like the sports science guy on there.
Of course.
And the sports science guy just had to basically show about how many baseballs in MLB in one season fell on the warning track and what percentage of velocity would require them to be home runs versus fly ball, fly outs in the outfield, right?
Okay.
And so, you know, it was like less than 1% additional velocity, and you could get that out of like the leather being tougher on the baseball and all this other conspiracy theory type stuff
that
had nothing to do with the amphetamines being handed out like candy in the locker room.
Whatever, years, they were all on roids. You can't convince me otherwise.
Right. But it's, it's stuff like that that when they show you that all you need is this, like, this little advantage, and you'll go from hitting, 90 fly balls to, adding 15 to 20 more home runs to your, to your total, then guys might be willing to hear them out, And I think in sports, everybody's trying to look for a competitive advantage that doesn't cross the line. And you just kind of inch your way towards a point where you're literally banging on trash cans like, idiots and allegedly having secret buzzers taped to your person. I think that you don't start off there, but you get there by little steps into the cheating, by dipping your toes into the cheating and then having it kind of expand. That's all the Astros are going to be known for, though. And now, even if they do it this season, people are still going to be like, cheaters, cheaters, they're still cheaters. Well, I don't know how, but they cheated some way.
No, what they'll do is they'll reemphasize the asterisk that comes with the 2020 season.
Sure.
And we hear that in every sport that's going on right now, that there's an asterisk because the season is different and it's only 2 months long and there was a trade deadline 3 weeks into the season and all these and expanded playoffs and, whatever. No, I think when we look back on it, regardless of who wins the World Series this year, we're going to look back on it as a regular World Series. I just don't see it any other way.
Yeah.
There will be people, of course, who say otherwise, but realistically, teams went through as much, if not more, adversity in this playoffs this year than any other playoffs.
Absolutely.
It's not like they had it handed to them. You know what I mean?
We talked about it being a sprint, and the thing it eventually became was an obstacle course, right? It wasn't a marathon. It wasn't a sprint. It was, can you survive, and can you get around these dangerous pitfalls and all of these new, you know, basically things that you have, adversities to overcome? Really, in the end, the best teams in baseball this season, even in the shortened season, even in the preseason when they were talking about who was going to be good, even if you go back to the pre-COVID season when we were still, you know, happy and everything was good and it was, you know,
back
spring
in February.
Training. Back in February. The
last time I smiled.
Right. The teams that they were talking about being good then are here. I think the Tampa Bay Rays might be the only exception that people weren't talking about early on that made it this far and have been this good. But all the other teams were teams that people expected to see here, maybe with the exception of the Astros. Maybe people expected the Astros to be a little worse. But still, these are the teams. These are the elite teams in baseball, and they made it through this crazy obstacle course season to get to this point. I don't take anything away from it. I don't really want to see that World Series I brought up. I just think at times that that's best for baseball. If you had a Braves-Rays World Series, nobody's going to care about that. You know, and that's unfortunate, but I'm just saying the Braves are a young, exciting team that not a lot of people know about, and the Rays are
people
again,
like
the team
us would
it.
Enjoy it.
We would love it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We would love it. And
hardcore baseball fans.
I think the advancement of the game to include these teams that are new, good teams, you know, rather than seeing the Dodgers and the Astros in the World Series again. You know, people get sick of that. If you're not a fan of one of those two fan bases, it makes it really easy to turn it off.
It's like seeing the Patriots in the Super Bowl year after year after year.
I was just talking to my wife about that with Tom Brady. I'm like, it's weird how much more likable he kind of is now on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, just because now instead of him being this perennial, you know, juggernaut champion that wins year after year that you kind of hate, now he's like this aging, you know, athlete that's trying to hold on to his former glory with his giant polar bear that he takes everywhere he goes. And now he's on this young team that's been kind of good for a number of years, but just needed something to get over that hump. And it was fun to watch last night because I found myself rooting for Tom Brady for the first time in a long time. You know, I just think that baseball, I would love for that to be that kind of thing that gets people excited and gets them watching. But I don't think that's the case. I think what I was talking about earlier with it being the Dodgers and the Astros, that's what's probably going to gain the interest of the common person that's not that big of a fan, but will be interested based on the rivalry and the hatred between the two teams.
So you're rooting for the Yankees tonight in the series?
I'm rooting for the Yankees pretty much at all times. That's a little secret between you and me, Steve.
Really?
Yeah, don't tell anybody.
Wait, why?
Well, because
I also like the Yankees.
I was brought up as a Yankees fan, so it's hard for me. Yeah, I was.
I thought you were from Puerto Rico.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Puerto Rico?
Weird.
Yeah.
That doesn't make much sense to me.
Yeah.
Right.
Before we move off the playoffs, shout out to the Marlins, man. What a cool story that was to see them in the playoffs. After all they went through with their dumb players getting COVID and being stupid, and they got into the playoffs, they beat the Chicago Cubs. And it looks like they have a pretty decent, you know, core of young players that's going to help them win for the foreseeable future. I'm kind of excited now to see what the Marlins do. I've never said that in my life. I'm excited to see what the Marlins do. But
I'm going to tell you what they're going to do. In like 2 to 3 seasons, they're going to win a World Series.
No.
And then they'll sell every single person off.
Stop.
And start all
they'll build
over
a new
from
stadium.
Scratch.
That's exactly what they do. Yeah, they'll build a new stadium. They'll change their uniforms.
Yep.
They'll go back to Florida Marlins.
Yep.
They'll be the South Beach Marlins.
They'll get the Marlins guy in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Or Lauderdale Marlins.
My favorite part about the Marlins' little playoff run was the Marlins fans talking about how great this team would have been had Zach Gallen been part of the rotation with it. And that just delighted me.
It's so funny how they have not gotten over that.
It's hard to when he goes on to make history for,
sure.
You know what I mean?
That's
like,
true.
MLB history is hard to make. And
think about how you feel about Max Scherzer.
Exactly.
I'm not saying they're on the same level, but it's a similar comp.
I feel for Marlins fans then because I feel some kind of way about Max Scherzer.
I still have his poster up in my garage.
I don't know what another good example is. We talked about Carlos Gonzalez He turned out to be a pretty good player.
He's the best one.
Yeah. Scherzer by far is the best one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
he's one of the best pitchers of all time. Well, yeah. Not of all time, but of recent memory.
In our game, he's one of the better pitchers in the game.
Yeah.
And never really came to much fruition in Arizona specifically. Yeah, the Marlins thing was interesting. You know what I thought was most interesting about the Marlins is, remember at the beginning of the season, right when, like, I think it was like 17 players had COVID-19.
Yeah.
And they put out that report. I forget who it was, if it was Passan or whoever, who said the Marlins are out there looking for major league talent. Like, they were bringing people in, and they're like, we just need somebody who can play the game of baseball.
Sounds like a great scene from a movie where they just have, like, normal dudes from the street doing.
They were trying to tread water. That's all they cared about. And then they ended up winning a playoff series.
That's the excitement of this expanded playoffs. And I think that's the potential for the future, right? Going back to what Bear said about the Dodgers should have had the easiest road because they earned it, right? I mean, they earned it. And to be honest, this playoff structure doesn't do anything to benefit that team that earned it other than, like other sports, giving them the shot against the eighth seed instead of a better team.
But it counteracts that seeding with a best of three series. All a team has to do is win two freaking games.
Right. Yeah. Like, which is really easy to do against a hot team that just made the playoffs and is on a roll. I like that structure, and I hope they keep it going forward. Like I said, they still ended up sifting to this point where we have what many consider to be the best teams in the league left anyway. So, you know, now these guys can duke it out, but you can't say that other teams didn't have a shot. Some of those teams did more with their shot than we thought they were going to, like the Marlins. You know, that made it fun, and it made the playoffs interesting to watch early on. I was really enjoying it. And then we get to this point where, you know, I'm not a fan of a lot of the teams left, but I'm interested to see how this whole thing plays out.
Let's shift to the Diamondbacks, who there isn't a lot of news these days. I do know one piece of news that I know Bear wants to comment on. We'll get to that in a second. But we are going to hand out awards based on how the season went down for the Diamondbacks. I know the season in total was, I don't want to say a disaster, but can we call it a disaster? I think it was very disappointing.
Mm,
definitely disappointing. The only news
was
nugget
a downer.
Yeah.
I'm still happy with the direction that they went instead of them finishing in a way that the Milwaukee Brewers did, right? If they would have gone into an eighth seed and just lost the two games to the Dodgers and kind of got steamrolled, what progress would have been made? What advancements, what prospects would have they have gotten back for Robbie Ray had they not traded him? He would have walked away probably at the end of the season as a free agent, gone elsewhere. I'm glad that even though it was considered a disaster, that they still made moves to try to, like, wipe the slate clean and figure out where they need to go from here instead of that treading water.
They've made player moves, but it sounds like they're not making any major coaching moves. Bear, give us your thoughts on hearing the news this week that it looks like they're not going to have a massive overhaul of their coaching staff.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really expecting a lot of changes there. Most of the time when a team struggles, you either look at the pitching coach or the hitting coach. They just hired Matt Hurges to be their pitching coach this past offseason, so I wasn't really expecting him to get canned or anything this offseason, and despite how bad most of their pitchers pitch. But I was kind of interested in the fact that they're bringing back Darnell Coles, their hitting coach, because their hitting this year, man, was pretty down, and he's been here for a couple of years now, so I thought, just for the sake, sometimes you just have to have that person to blame, and the coach usually the hitting coach gets that blame. So I thought maybe they would, you know, make a change there, but it looks like they're bringing back everybody from Torey Lovello's coaching staff. I thought that was kind of interesting. Just like we said, this year was really disappointing, and we've been talking about the playoffs. The playoffs were expanded this year, and the expectation on the Diamondbacks before this 60-game season started was they should be in the playoffs. They should have one of these eight spots in the National League, and they didn't even come close. So I thought maybe there would be kind of that, you know, that scapegoat on the coaching staff, that, you know, just to show the fan base they're trying to make changes and trying to get better, but not saying that they're not trying to get better by keeping everybody, but we'll see. I don't know.
Mike Hazen discussed this on his last media appearance at the end of the season, and he basically said that, you know, or alluded to it being up to Torey Lavolo. And he said that Lavolo was the one that was going to be having these discussions with the coaches and that he would be talking to us about who he would be keeping. Lavolo then said that he was approaching it the same for every single coach, whether they were under contract still or this was the end of their contract. So, you know, that right there might have just led to him, you know, having some discussions and believing in some guys. That might be a fault of Lavolo, or it might be, you know, something you can commend him for. He's very loyal to people, and I think he definitely believes in giving players and coaches and things multiple chances before giving up on them. I don't know. Maybe he looks at some certain numbers, and maybe it's not necessarily, you know, a hitting coach's fault that guys went into, you know, a rut, or at least he doesn't see it as being that.
So if it's not a coaching thing, and I know they traded for fairly significant players, for major league guys, not guys who are up and down, up and down, up and down. So if it's not a coaching thing, is it a personnel thing, or was it a mindset thing?
He seemed to think of it as some personal accountability on himself as the manager. You know, Lavolo, he wasn't blaming it on other coaches as much as at times he was blaming it on himself. I think he had an erratic year. Lavolo has 7 ejections from games in his career, and 3 of them were this season.
In the 60-game season.
In the 60-game season.
And about a third of the time as those other seasons.
I think that shows his level of frustration personally with his team, with what was going on, with the whole situation. He tends to be a very level-headed guy. He tends to come into the locker room and do his best to, like, you know, as he discussed, he's very hands-on, meaning he likes to high-five and give hugs and do stuff like that. And
at
times, he felt lost not being able to do that, not having human contact with people, you know. I can kind of understand where he's coming from, but I also don't place the blame necessarily on him. I think it was personnel-related. I think that it's still going to be personnel-related if they don't make any moves this offseason, because this team, as it's structured, still isn't good enough, in my opinion, to make any kind of significant playoff run. I could be wrong, though. I mean, there's a lot of young guys on this team that could turn it on the major league level, and you know, we're talking about a different team altogether here.
So, Bear, do you think that puts Torey Lavolo on any sort of hot seat?
I don't know if he's on a hot seat. I mean, but just let's face facts. The last time they made the playoffs was 3 years ago, his first year as manager.
Manager of the year, by the way.
Yeah, he was the manager, NL manager of the year. That's right. And they haven't been back since then. Granted, this will be their first losing season under Torey Lavolo, where they're not 500 or better. But, I mean, I know, I feel like listening to Mike Hazen talk for these last few years, I know that just having a winning season is not good enough for him. So I think Torey still gets next year, at least, if not the year after that, to see if they can make it back to the playoffs or not. But going back to what you said about mindset, I think part of it was mindset from the players. I think part of it was that mindset, and just seeing one of your team leaders, Eduardo Escobar, show up out of shape to the summer camp, that says something. Eduardo Escobar is, Torey will say it, everyone will say he's a team leader, and he showed up not ready to play baseball. Another mindset type of thing, Madison Bumgarner, shutting down in spring training, he's very a routine-oriented person, and it didn't look like he was anywhere near close to ready to pitch when the season started in July. So I don't know. It could be a lot of different things, but including what Derek said, you know, Torey blaming himself, and it was a lot of things, man. It was,
yeah, no, I mean, you're right, but
nothing went right.
What I hear
for this team,
what I hear when you say that is the veteran leaders on this team weren't ready.
Right.
And it's hard for the younger guys to look up and see them not, you know, them floundering, them being frustrated, them not, you know, being ready and you know, follow that, you know, follow them as leaders. It was definitely an erratic season. And as far as Lovullo being on the hot seat, if they had another season like this, then yes. I don't care how much support he has from management. I couldn't help but think he would be on the hot seat after that. And if the following season started poorly or didn't get off to a hot enough start, I mean, I could see him parting ways with Lovullo midseason. You know, it could happen that fast. I don't think that they're going to accept being a bad team or a mediocre team, especially if Mike Hazen feels like he has given Lovullo the right pieces for success. You know.
Wow, you really dropped a bomb there.
I'm just saying,
they could drop him in the middle of the season. I mean, I know you're right that anything could happen, but
I feel like it could happen that fast.
I agree with Bear that I feel like he has next year locked up. Like,
yes,
they're going to.
Yes,
bring,
that's what I was saying.
He's definitely coming back in the spring.
Uh huh.
There's no reason to believe otherwise.
Sure. No. I'm not saying next season, mid season. I'm saying if they had a bad season next year.
Oh, okay.
And then the following season started off slow. I could see them not even waiting a full second,
right.
You know, or in this case, third bad season in a row for him to stick around. I think no matter how bad next year goes, he will still be around. He'll still have an opportunity. It would probably be more on him and how he feels. I think Hazen and Lovullo are close enough that, you know, I could possibly see Lovullo tapping out as manager before I see Mike Hazen giving up on him, you know. Where Lovullo might say to Hazen, like, maybe you need to look somewhere else. Maybe I'm not the right guy for the job.
The mutual parting of ways.
Right.
I'm doing the air quotes.
He's doing that.
I'm always doing the air quotes.
But there were still a lot of good things, I think.
Yeah, let's talk about the good things. Let's do that. Let's brighten up this podcast. So let's go through. Each of us will pick an MVP of the Diamondback season.
Okay.
A rookie of the year. And let's just do a gold glove.
Gold glover?
Our
favorite gold glover, even though they're not on the field. Oh, no, you're talking about gold glove. Okay, you're talking about the actual, like,
the award. Are you talking about the golden glovers?
Yeah, the golden
glovers. The old people that fetch the balls?
Why do you have to say old people?
Because they are.
That's rude. Some of them aren't.
You were just skirting around it.
Yeah.
Bear went straight for the jugular.
Yeah, let's start off with the golden glovers.
You want to start there?
Yeah, let's start there.
All right, Derek, give us your golden glover.
My golden glover is Cole Calhoun.
Okay.
Believe it or not, Cole Calhoun had the highest fielding percentage of any of the outfielders for the Diamondbacks this season.
Wow.
He had a .990 fielding percentage, and I think he just did a great job, stepping into this role. We talked about him doing exactly what we expected out of him, but he had good numbers for the Angels, and the Diamondbacks brought him over because of those numbers. Cole Calhoun stepped right up, and even on a bad team, was a bright spot. He had the most home runs offensively. He did a lot of good things offensively, but defensively, where we weren't expecting him to be great, he was better than average. So I give him a lot of credit for being our best outfielder.
And I feel like the Diamondbacks haven't really had a solidified right fielder in a while. I mean, we went through plenty of experiments here in Arizona over the last couple of years, whether it was... I mean, David Peralta at sometimes has played right, but I mean, you went through the Tomas incident. You went through
JD Martinez. Souza.
Yeah, but Martinez was a fix to a problem that I'm talking about, and then he left. And so it was constant.
Never really why did that he good of a right. fielder?
No, yeah, exactly. He wasn't
shut
that
your
good.
Mouth, Bear.
Yeah.
You're lucky you're not in the studio with me right now.
Oh my goodness,
I would attack you.
All right, I like the Cole Calhoun pick.
No, Cole Calhoun.
He shows effort. I like that.
You know what it is too. He's built like Ram Man from He-Man.
Okay.
Right? And
I hadn't thought about it until now, but okay.
It's impressive that he's that athletic with that build.
That's fair.
He's a good fielder.
That's fair. All right, Bear, who are you picking for your golden glover?
Well, I was going to say Cole Calhoun as well, but I got him. I'll go different here.
Second place.
just looking at their fielding percentages of their fielders, Christian Walker. I'll say Christian Walker, honestly. He also had a .990 fielding percentage. He had 268 putouts. He had 28 assists from first base. And, you know, he was a finalist. I believe he was a finalist last year as well. And he lost out to Anthony Rizzo again. But honestly, Christian Walker, he's been a really solid player since they traded Paul Goldschmidt away. He's been solid with the bat, and he's also been pretty solid with the glove. And I didn't really, you know, obviously replacing Paul Goldschmidt, who is an MVP type player and also a Gold Glove Award winner, I was not expecting him to be that great because I didn't really know Christian Walker until Paul Goldschmidt was traded. And it's been refreshing to see how he's a solid Major League Baseball player. So, and I was pleasantly surprised with how good he is with the glove. So I'll go with Christian Walker.
I would say that you're definitely right about Walker, and it's nice too because, I mean, ever since Goldie got traded, it's nice. Derek, you have your hand up.
I'm excited. What? I just want to point something out. I'm excited. Christian Walker, by the way, in 2020, 7 home runs. Paul Goldschmidt, 6 home runs.
Okay. I knew that was where you were going.
I'm just saying.
Is he better than... Cardinals did have a bout with COVID, though, so they didn't play as many games.
Shut up, Bear. People don't need to know that.
I feel like you two are at odds today. On the
podcast. I don't like what he said about J.D. Martinez not being a good fielder.
Yeah, for sure. I think the easy pick would be Nick Ahmed.
No, it wouldn't.
He's the most talented fielder.
I would
beg to
differ.
He did not have the best season in terms of gloving.
Oh, so you're just giving him a Gold Glove?
No,
now
I'm not picking him.
Based on past?
I'm not picking him.
Oh, okay.
I'm picking somebody else. I'm picking Ketel Marte at second
Nick
base.
Nick Ahmed made 7 errors this
seven
year.
Errors?
7 errors.
In
good.
60 games.
That's not good. He is, I still think of him as the best fielder on the team.
Well, you'd be wrong about that, like, according to the numbers.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. No, I will go with Starling Marte. Ketel Marte, I'm picking, because Ketel at second base, this is the first time we've seen him at one position starting regularly and not having to switch back and forth between shortstop, second base, center field, whatever it is that they needed at the time.
Very true.
Last year, when he was one of the better players in baseball, he was doing it where he played basically half the season in center and half the season at second base, and he was good at both. And we were all kind of worried going into last season about him playing center field every day, having no outfield experience, and he played it well. Now this year, he got the chance to step into an everyday role where he does the same spot every time, and I thought he handled it pretty well. And I think this is more about him as a player, because we knew that he was an athletic guy. He came up as a shortstop. I know most people do, but he came up playing shortstop in this organization in Seattle and wherever, and he had the athleticism to go out and play center field. So then when you put him at a position like second base, I feel like his athleticism is allowed to shine, because there are a lot of guys who get put at second base who just aren't that. Guys like, I think of Robinson Cano, just wasn't a great fielder at any point. He was a hitter, and they just needed a place to put him, so they stuck him at second base. Daniel Murphy, not a great fielder. Stuck him at second base.
Right.
But Ketel Marte is not. He is the new mold of second base, in my opinion, where you have uber-athletic guys like Ozzie Albies playing the position, Jose Altuve playing the position, where they got crazy range, and they're basically a shortstop playing second base. Right. And I think that Ketel Marte is creating that mold in Major League Baseball.
I really hope they don't put Ketel back in center field next year. I really hope they go out and find a center fielder somewhere, whether it's their minor league system or some kind of free agency or trade, because I think, like you, I completely agree, Steve. I think he's his most valuable when he's playing second base. He's so smooth at second base and shortstop, if you want to throw him over there too, in the middle infield. I hope they don't throw him back out in center field.
All right, let's move to MVP. What do you want to do, MVP, or you want
let's
to do?
Let's do rookie of the
rookie
year.
Rookie of the year.
Yeah.
Derek, give us your rookie of the year for the Diamondbacks.
Well, I think you guys know who that is. It's Dalton Varshow. I think he got called up under unlikely circumstances that aren't great, aren't ideal for any young player who still hasn't gone through the minor league system fully. I think he adapted well. And I don't know if you guys remember this, but do you remember that time he bunted against the shift?
Oh, my God.
That
yes,
shows,
Derek, we remember
that
we
shows,
were up about it.
That shows a level of veteran leadership that
I don't
you
know
just,
about that.
You, can't,
okay.
you just don't have. Mm. You can't. You know how much pressure there is out there with those unwritten rules, Steve? Do you know how much courage God. You have to break those unwritten rules?
He bunted
shift?
One time,
yeah,
Derek.
Yeah, against a bunch of looking jerks that couldn't get up to the ball. Yeah, they look great.
Good disc.
It was awesome. No, I think, though, that his versatility was awesome this season because the Diamondbacks needed it. They needed someone that could play all of these different positions, and his numbers absolutely don't reflect it, but I felt like he was a valuable piece for Lavello to put lineups together and have, you know, people be able to go out there and be capable of handling the position. I think he's going to continue to get better, but I was just really impressed by his presence in a lot of situations. I mean, just some of the steals he had, some of the situational base running and just athleticism he showed. I always thought of him as being a catcher, and I don't think that's where he's probably going to end up, but you know, we'll see what happens with him as he develops.
He's their primary center fielder.
I know, it's
which
crazy.
Is weird.
His highest level of baseball going into this was AA last season. So, I mean, I think that's what I think of, is somebody that kind of rushed through not even getting to go to Reno and smash the ball for, you know, a half a season and have that fun.
Or a full spring training.
Or a full spring training, right? I still think it's very valuable to have these young guys around the Diamondbacks' actual coaching staff because it's just valuable knowledge that they're sharing with them. The minor league system is just still important, and I don't think that, you know, bypassing any part of it is good for the development of a player. I was just impressed with what he was able to do given the circumstances.
Are we cool with giving Rookie of the Year to a guy who hit 188?
I told you don't worry about the numbers.
I heard you say it. I still worry about
he
it.
He hit over 300 last season in Double A.
I like Dalton Varsho too, and I wrote him down as I would give him Rookie of the Year as well, but I just went and looked at the numbers and I was like, oof.
You felt like questioning it.
Because you said don't look at the numbers.
I told you not to.
I know, but you tell me not to push the button, I'm going to push the button.
I know.
Bear, who do you got?
This is really – well, I was going to say Dalton Varsho, but Derek said the same one again, so sure, I'll say a different one. This is really difficult because, as you said, don't look at the numbers. I'm looking at the numbers right now, and they're all terrible for all the rookies that played. But I'll go with Pavin Smith. Pavin Smith. Sure. He only played in 12 games for the Diamondbacks this year, but I was really intrigued – to see what he would do when he finally got the call up. This was Mike Hazen's first round draft pick of his tenure as GM for the D-backs. And he came up and was pretty good. I mean, in 12 games, he hit 270, hit a home run, four RBIs, walked five times in 37 at-bats, 10 hits in 37 at-bats. He wasn't great. None of the rookies were great. Besides Dalton Varsho bunting against the shift.
Yeah, that's great. But, see, Bear gets it.
Why do you feed into it? Why do you do this?
But honestly, I thought Pavin Smith came up and did a pretty good job, and he showed that he can play some outfield and he can play some first. So I'll give Pavin Smith my Rookie of the Year. Also, though, I feel like Wyatt Matheson was decent as well, but I mean, he played the least amount of games.
I'll take Wyatt Matheson. Why not?
You know, we can agree, guys. It's fine. This team wasn't good enough to have three rookies of the year.
We all picked Varsho because he's the rookie that got called up and then ended up being an everyday player.
He bunted on the shift. That's why we all did.
I'm intrigued to see what Andy Young has in store as well.
Okay.
Because when he came up, he looked like he could handle himself at the big league level, and then for some reason, he got sent down again, and I didn't really understand why. I think he got sent down because they brought Ketel Marte back off the injured list, and I was like, why? There are four games left, and why would you risk him getting hurt again? But anyway.
Know. There were several things like that they did, and I think they were just doing it just to maneuver and just so that they had enough pieces. There's other things that we talked about before, like Yon Lopez, when he got sent down, that was very suspect. Like, it didn't seem like he had done anything.
We still
don't know why that happened. I could definitely see, especially with the way Diamondbacks have talked to us as media about stuff and been honest about this, that they don't need to tell us everything. And sometimes it makes it into a bigger deal. If you just wanted to discipline someone briefly, like that situation potentially because whatever reason, then you don't really need to discuss it or make it a big deal. You can just make moves like that, especially with the alternate site stuff. It's not like they're sending them actually to Reno or something. They're sending them to Scottsdale, to a very nice facility down the road. Right.
Right. Where they're getting reps.
Yeah.
I'll throw out Riley Smith. He only pitched 18 innings, but came out with a 1.47 ERA. I'd say that's a pretty good start.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Beats the alternative.
All you can do is take these little bits and hope that these guys grow. You know, a lot of the players we talked about earlier, Max Scherzers of the world, there was a time where they didn't look like they were, you know, going to be what they ended up being. So
yeah, like when he wore a Diamondbacks jersey. sorry to bring that up.
Can we just do the MVP now?
Yeah, let's move on to MVP.
I can't imagine it not being a consensus across the board.
I don't know. We're going to find out.
I guess we are. I'm going to start off with Zach Gallen, the milkman. Obviously, way more than what we expected him to be, yet he did exactly what he did last season. You know, he's just this – he's a quality player that's not very flashy. It's almost like Cole Calhoun. You almost don't believe that his numbers in the outfield are as good as they are. Zach Gallen at times doesn't look like he's as dominant as he is. He just is very successful at minimizing the damage, keeping guys, you know, off base, not getting himself into big jams, and even when he makes mistakes, keeping it to a run or two. You know, I think that that's a quality that you can't like, yeah, he has a major league record and everything, but it's not a sexy stat. It's not one of those that wows people in the way that it should. It is hard to go out there and do this night in and night out the way that Gallen did for that number of games. You're going to have nights where you don't feel good. You're going to have nights where you didn't sleep great. You're going to just have off nights where the team is picking something up or they're just on a hot streak and they just, you know, took you for five runs or plus. You know, it's not common for even really good pitchers to be that consistent for that long. The Diamondbacks absolutely scored with acquiring Gallen, and I hope that in the future that he is, you know, that crown jewel of their rotation. I know they have Bumgarner, and he's always going to be the ace, but a 1-2 combination of Gallen and Bumgarner, who have very different styles, you know, in pitching, it's a good base to build on.
Bear, do you agree?
Yes, Zach Gallen is the MVP, no doubt. Poor guy couldn't buy a win though this season. Only finished with 3 wins. But yeah, completely agree with everything Derek said. It's very hard to make Major League Baseball history when Major League Baseball has been around for literally hundreds of years.
Yes.
Yeah. And he did that this year. So that it's insane. But just look at the number: 72 innings pitched, 82 strikeouts, a 2.75 ERA, only 25 walks, a 1.11 WHIP. The guy was lights out this year, and I'll go even a step further. I think he is already the ace of this pitching staff.
Yep.
I know it might not be, you know, you can still say Madison Bumgarner is the ace, but Zach Gallen is the best pitcher on this pitching
staff.
Zach
Gallen wears the crown. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. So, no brainer for me. Zach Gallen was the D-backs MVP this year.
You know, one
no
thing
doubt.
I liked about him is when we were talking to him about the history that he made, he wasn't full of himself, but he wasn't surprised. Like, he started talking.
Got a quiet confidence.
Yeah, well, I mean, he started talking about how, like, last season when he started realizing that he was on this, you know, on this path and that he had been as consistent as he was, that he could do it. Like, he was already thinking about making history last season.
Like, he knew about it before we even thought it was a thing.
Thought it was a thing. Before we started doing any kind of countdown or being
he's aware of it.
He's 5 game back. You know, he just knew he was capable of this, and he, you know, was ready to show it. You know, he was ready for himself to be, you know, have everything click into place. And he just felt like that had been the case since he was, you know, back with the Marlins and then when he got traded to the D-backs. He has shown to be remarkably consistent in a game that you just can't be that consistent typically, you know, and when you are, you usually are one of the elite.
Well, I'll make it simple. Clean sweep. I picked Zach Gallen as well. I actually wanted to give this MVP award to Starling Marte, who was the best hitter on this team and got traded halfway through the season. So and now he's a Marlin where Zach Gallen came from. But no, it is Zach Gallen. It always was going to be Zach Gallen, especially in a year where you sign a guy like Madison Bumgarner in the biggest free agent deal that Mike Hazen has ever made as general manager. It's arguably the only big free agency move he's ever made.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's made key signings, but never anything worth $80 million or $85, whatever it was. So in a year where that happens and Madison Bumgarner doesn't show up, I mean, I think that's fair to say. He did not show up until the last 2 starts of the season. So it was huge for Gallen to show up because we didn't expect Merrill Kelly to be as good as he was. Merrill Kelly was really good.
Really good.
For 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and then he got hurt around middle of the season. And that was devastating in its own right to lose Merrill Kelly. But think about it. If Bumgarner and Merrill Kelly and Luke Weaver and Robbie Ray were all terrible, Zach Gallen has this incredible pressure on him. And we already were talking about him before the season. At the end of last season when they acquired him and he was doing so well, I think he had like, what, 15 starts or whatever last year. We were all talking like, oh yeah, he's already their best pitcher. I mean, realistically, after they traded Greinke, that's what it was.
Yeah,
I mean, you predicted, Derek, that he was going to start on opening day, which was a little bit facetious, but at the same time, we all kind of acknowledged he's the best one they've got.
Yeah,
he is. We knew that 10 to 15 starts into his career.
And I'm going to stick with it this offseason that he will be the starter on opening day next year.
You think
and
so?
I'll probably be wrong. No, it'll probably be Bumgarner.
It'll probably be Bumgarner.
But
seniority, I feel like.
Sure.
But Gallen is their best pitcher.
Yeah.
I'm willing to say that right now. I was willing to say it at the beginning of this season, and I'll continue to say it. Yeah, he's the MVP, far and away.
It's wild, but he's one of the few guys that lived up to the hype because I remember how excited we were when they acquired him, and we were kind of scratching our heads as to say, like, what are we missing about this guy that the Marlins would get rid of him for, no offense, but again, it's the unproven nature of Jazz Chisholm not playing at a major league level and Zach Gallen already showing to have, you know, proving to have success at a major league level at that point.
Yeah.
You can have all the potential in the world, but it's a whole other thing to reach that potential and be showing that you're capable of it.
Well, and they had just stocked the farm system a year ago at that time because in the draft in, what is it, June or May or whatever it is, they had just stocked the farm system so that a lot of people were talking about they went from bottom 5 to 10 organizationally in baseball to all of a sudden top 5 to 10 in Major League Baseball. In that draft alone, they had 7 picks in the top 75.
Yeah.
And we were all like, oh my goodness, look at what they just did. Look at what Mike Hazen just did. He stocked the whole farm system. And then they turned around a month later and they traded their top prospect. And we all kind of looked at each other like,
what's going on?
Why? Yeah. Why? Well, like, this is a team that hasn't had good prospects in a long time. And I still wonder if they viewed Jazz Chisholm as a top prospect or if he was just in the mix, you know?
Yeah.
Because there isn't a clear cut, number one.
The top prospect thing is an outsider perspective.
Yeah.
But still.
Exactly.
I also think they viewed Jazz Chisholm as, wow, we have a pretty good amount of shortstops that we like in this organization, Nick Ahmed included. Ahmed, and then they sign Ahmed to that extension. And they also have Geraldo Perdomo in the minor leagues who looks like he's going to be a pretty good ball player. So I feel like they felt like they could trade Jazz Chisholm if they really saw a trade that they wanted to make. And they did. And I mean, Jazz Chisholm made the Marlins roster this year. He got called up to the big leagues and he had a couple flashy plays and he looks like he's going to be
a good baseball player too. Yeah.
But Zach Gallen is the Diamondbacks' best pitcher that on their team in their organization. And they got him for just a prospect where they dealt from a position of depth, I feel like.
Once again, we remember the one phrase that we have said throughout this entire management period, and that is, in Hazen we trust. It seems like no matter what, even this season, things haven't worked out. Diamondbacks haven't won a championship under Hazen. It's not like he's the best manager, but he is still doing the best to bring this franchise back to a point of being competitive and having a future both at the same time when there didn't seem to be any future or anything. The previous owners had basically burnt it down to the ground, and Hazen is, you know, doing his best to build it back up.
I'm just glad that you said that the motto is "In Hazen we trust," and not what I thought you were going to say, which was "Bunt against the shift."
Every single time, Steve.
We're going to wrap this up. We thank you so much for listening. We're going to keep you up to speed on all things going on in the playoffs. We will be back next week to evaluate possibly our World Series picks. Some of them are still alive, some of them are not, but we'll keep you up to speed on that. We thank you so much for listening. It is the Ain't No Fang podcast. I'm Steve Zinsmeister with Derek Montilla and Cody Fincher as well. Thank you for listening here at ArizonaSports.com and on the Arizona Sports app.